Back in the Old Testament, there lived a wise man. This wise man wasn't just a wise man. This wise man was also a very successful king. The kingdom of Israel grew and prospered under his rule. This wise king was King Solomon. And amidst his earthly success, Solomon searched for meaning in life. He searched for purpose. And thoughtfully, he recorded his pursuit of meaning. And that book that he recorded this pursuit of meaning in found its way into our Bibles. The book is called Ecclesiastes. If you'd like to turn there, just open your Bible in the middle somewhere. Most of the time you'll find Psalm or Isaiah. If you find the book of Psalms, go forward, as I did. And if you find Isaiah, then go backwards. It's in between those two books. Ecclesiastes. Now in this book, Solomon records his systematic search of fulfillment in this life. He looks at many different sources for finding fulfillment. And amidst these sources, one of the things he looks at is pleasure. Which makes perfect sense, doesn't it? I mean, pleasurable things are called pleasurable things because they're pleasurable. Right? And there's a certain amount of fulfillment there in something that is pleasurable. So what a great place to look. I'll look in pleasurable things. So it just makes sense. So let's look at Solomon's findings. Read with me the first verse of chapter 2 in Ecclesiastes. I thought in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is foolish. And what does pleasure accomplish? Solomon found that pursuit of earthly pleasure was meaningless. Now, many of us would question this. And especially if you don't know Solomon, if you don't know the book of Ecclesiastes, we'd ask him, are you sure? I mean, because there's a lot of pleasurable things out there. And you're saying that you've looked through them all? I mean, maybe he hasn't found the right thing or hasn't looked in the right place. I'm told on TV that for everything else, there's MasterCard. And there should be something that my MasterCard should be able to buy me that's going to give me pleasure that is fulfilling. So maybe he didn't look in the right place. Maybe he didn't look for the right pleasure. Maybe he just didn't find the right thing. Well, as we read on, we'll find out that he looked in a lot of different places. Continue with me. Verse 3. He says, I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly. My mind still guiding me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was worthwhile for men to do under heaven during the few days of their lives. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired men and women singers and a harem as well, the delights of the heart of man. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my work, and this was the reward for all my labor. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done, and I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. I think Solomon looked in a good number of places. That's a pretty exhaustive list. I mean, you look at what the umbrella is of the things that he looked through. He looked into to find this fulfillment through pleasure. And let's kind of categorize these. He looked for fulfillment through the pleasures of wine or alcohol, kind of a party atmosphere that he indulged in there at the beginning. That didn't work for him, so he went to hobbies. He took up some hobbies, and for him it was building things. Planting gardens became a big hobby for him, and he got really into it. But that still didn't bring him this fulfillment he was looking for. So he looked into material gain, and out beside that in your bulletins, you can use a much better word for that, stuff. He looked into stuff. He had slaves. He said, I had slaves. I had males and females. They had babies. I had baby slaves. I had adult slaves. I mean, I had slaves. And then he talks about that he had herds and flocks of animals more than anyone in Jerusalem before him. He amassed for himself gold and silver. And even through all this stuff, still didn't find the meaning he was looking for. So then he turned to entertainment. And he hired men and women singers and entertainers. He went beyond that and he got a harem of women to take care of any sexual fantasies that he had. Now seriously, guys. If the wine and the hobbies and the massive amounts of stuff just didn't do it, surely a Playboy mansion filled with shapely women whose only purpose is to serve you sexually, that would come close, you think? Yeah, guys are scared to nod. They're sitting there very scared. You guys are wimps. I tell you the truth, 80% of men would admit that they agree with me. 20% just won't admit it. But these are the places that Solomon looked. He looked in all these places, all these different pleasures. He denied his heart no pleasure, but still he found no meaning in it. This month, we're diving into some topics, American idols, things that are idols in America. We talked about money the first week, and we talked about families the second week. If you've got a tape player, you can order the tapes out in the lobby there. If you've got internet, you can listen to it off the webpage. Catch up with us. As we continue our study of American idols, today we're talking about pleasure, entertainment. Look around us. We've got a nation of Solomon wannabes, don't we? And I figure that most of you guys probably looked in the mirror this morning. You might not have noticed it, but that person looking back at you very well may have been a pleasure-seeking, purpose-hungry person. Look at us. We chase after the same things that Solomon did thousands of years ago, and he already deemed them meaningless. We still chase after them. I mean, we take this list, these four things that we've kind of categorized this into, and we look at alcohol and wine. You know, today, as Jason mentioned in the video, is the Super Bowl Sunday. And as you watch today's game, Anheuser-Busch will have 7 commercials during the Super Bowl. At least this is their plan that I received from my research. One of them will be a 60-second commercial, and the others will be 30-second commercials, which, doing the quick math there, that's 4 minutes of commercial time. Now, Fox is, they're putting on the Super Bowl, and they're charging, does anybody know how much they're charging? $2.7 million for a 30-second slot. That's a lot of money. For these precious 4 minutes of time, Anheuser-Busch will fork over some $21.6 million for these advertisements. And the scary part is that this company is big enough, they have financial and analysts. They have professionals in the finance area that are saying, yeah, this is a good idea. This is a good investment. You know why? Because they're going to see a return from this. Next year, they're going to be able to spend another $21.6 or more on commercials for next year's Super Bowl. Why? Because they have the money. And they're going to have the money. Because Americans are pleasure-seeking people. They know they're going to have it. They can afford these advertisements. And we've got a lot of Americans that seek to find this meaning in life, this fulfillment through alcohol, through wine, beer, through these things that Solomon found that were meaningless when you take them all the way out to their nth degree. Solomon continued in his search and he looked into hobbies. Now, if we were to talk about our hobbies here, for every person, we would probably have a hobby, if not more than a hobby per person. Just a lot of different things that you can take on as a hobby. For Solomon, it was gardening. He took that on. I'm going to pick on myself here. Video gaming is a hobby of mine. And as we look at this industry, the video gaming industry has become quite the pastime for many Americans, not just myself. Last year, approximately 267.8 million computer and video games were sold. That's not the consoles. That's not the thing to play the video game on. These are just the video games. They racked up, once again, just in video games, $9.5 billion in entertainment software sales, and that's the United States alone. That's not worldwide. That's a lot of money. You know what that tells me? We've got a lot of pleasure-seeking people forking over their earnings for the pleasures that these video games give. So Solomon moved on from hobbies, and what did he move into next? He moved into stuff, material gain. You know, around our church, Dave Ramsey is a fairly common name. We have the financial peace class that we go through, and Dave Ramsey makes a living out of helping Americans get out of debt. There's more to it, but that's a large part of what he does. He makes a living off of that. We are indebted people as Americans. You know, if wealth were important to us, we would save our money. We would invest. There are a few that do that. But statistically speaking, for the most of us, we are in debt and we carry a lot of debt. And what this tells me is that stuff is more important than wealth. It's more important for us to have stuff and be in debt than have wealth and not have stuff. We're stuff driven. We like to have stuff. We like to play with stuff. We like to show stuff off. We like to collect stuff. We like to amass stuff. Why? Because there is a certain amount of pleasure that we get from having some of this stuff. A temporary feeling of fulfillment. But as Solomon found out, that's meaningless also. Solomon moves on to entertainment. Talking about the Super Bowl today. Did you know that over 90 million people will tune into the game today? That's a lot of people. A lot of people liking to be entertained. I heard a news report that $1 million will be spent on Super Bowl merchandise alone. $1 million. I went looking for tickets, just curious. And I found a site, coasttocoasttickets.com, just from a random Google search. And I was looking for Super Bowl tickets. And you can get the cheap seats for, you know, $1,500. But I found out that you can purchase a seat, and I checked this. There's still four seats available. In section 109, row 13, that's front row. That's on the 50-yard line. That's overlooking the Patriots bench. And you can purchase those for $10,340 per seat. That's all right, though. You can go on eBay and get a better deal. You can get four seats for $13,000. Buy it now. That's nuts. That's a lot of money. And people are paying that. You know, the total revenue for the NFL, the number I've got is from 2006, was about $6 billion total revenue. That was used in comparison to an article on 2007, Major League Baseball, claiming that they were right on the heels at a $6 billion number in their 2007 year. In 2005, NASCAR fans, they bought some $2.1 billion worth of merchandise. $2.1 billion merchandise. I can go on and on about the amount that singers and actors make. Some of these athletes, how much they get paid. There are many different forms of entertainment out there, and they are just cashing in on a pleasure-hungry group of people. We like to be entertained. And I want to stop here and just make a statement. I'm not going to swing way out here and say, pleasure's bad. Get rid of it. Get rid of anything that brings you pleasure. That'd be stupid. Pleasure's not a bad thing at all. Pleasurable things aren't necessarily evil. Pleasurable things are just that. They're pleasurable things. If we went back down through that list, there's nothing wrong with a little alcohol. The Bible doesn't say anything negative about one little glass. You look through entertainment, video games, there's something wrong with me playing a video game? Not at all. Hobbies? Being entertained? Watching the Super Bowl today? I hope we all enjoy watching the Super Bowl today. But with numbers like this, I get a little concerned. I get concerned about our country. I get concerned about us. Because the problem is, it's not when we enjoy clean, pleasurable things. But the problem happens when that pursuit of those pleasurable things becomes number one in our life. It creeps up through the ranks. When our desire to find pleasure takes top priority, when it takes priority over our job, we got a problem. Job should be number four. When it creeps up and it takes priority over number three, which is our family, it shouldn't creep up that high. If it does, we have a problem. If our search for pleasure goes above our church family, which is supposed to be number second in our life, if it goes beyond and it takes number one spot, the number one spot in our life is supposed to be reserved for God and God alone. When it takes that number one spot, we've got a problem with idol worship. Turn with me into the New Testament, a book called Timothy. If you're flipping through your New Testament, you'll catch the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. You'll see Romans and Corinthians. And then you'll see a bunch of other little books, little letters. And you'll see about five books that start with the letter T. Slow down. Timothy is the fourth of those five. If you hit Hebrews, you've gone too far. If you hit Revelation, you've gone way too far. But remember where that is. We're going to be turning to Revelation here as we close out later. 2 Timothy chapter 3. Now this passage starts off and Paul uses a term that a lot of people perk up when they hear it. He says, the last days. In the last days. Now, this term shows up in our Bible a number of different times. And when it shows up, it generally means one of two things. It either means the days that are immediately preceding the end of the world. Or another thing that this term can mean is it can cover the span of time from when Jesus was first here, his first coming, to all the way to when he comes again. Now, in most cases, when I see this term in the Bible, I lean towards that latter definition. And that's the direction I lean in this passage. I believe the circumstances that Paul is describing here in this passage, I believe these circumstances have been true for 2,000 years. I believe these circumstances that we're going to read about here, that they're going to be continuing on until Jesus comes back to take us home. So let's take a look at this. 2 Timothy chapter 3. We'll start with verse 1. But mark this, there will be terrible times in the last days. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, treacherous, rash, conceited. We'll pause there. I think many of you would agree that this is an accurate description of our society. Yes? Get some head shakes. So regardless what the meaning is there, I think this is something that we can relate to and something that I think speaks directly to us. So as we're thinking about that, read this next line. He says, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Having a form of godliness but denying its power. Have nothing to do with them. They are the kind who worm their way into homes and gain control over weak-willed women who are loaded down with sins and are swayed by all kinds of evil desires. Lovers of pleasure instead of lovers of God. We are told in this passage to have nothing to do with people who are lovers of pleasure over lovers of God. We are to avoid them. Why? Why is this so important? Well, first of all, we don't want even a hint of their influence in our lives. Because that's idol worship. When you put something above God and you love it more than you love God, that's idol worship. And we don't want that. We've been told by God that He is a jealous God. And when we love things above Him, that is that we make for ourselves idols and we worship them. We bow down to them instead of bowing down and worshiping God. We are told that that hurts God deeply. He gets jealous. There's a second reason that God's word tells us to stay clear of these type of people. And that is that a person who loves pleasure, and that's their number one priority in life, they're not a safe person to be around. Look at what the love of pleasure does to other relationships. In addition to hurting God, we hurt others when we are lovers of pleasure instead of lovers of God. When we are lovers of pleasure, it consumes our energy. It consumes our time. It consumes our resources. As we live pleasure-seeking lives, we feed a lifestyle and an attitude of selfishness. Paul gives an example of someone who exemplifies this type of selfishness. He says this type of person is a worm. That's just insulting, isn't it? I've never been called a worm myself, but that would be an awful insult to call someone a worm. He says that these people, they tunnel their way into the homes of easily manipulated women so that they can get what they want with as little resistance as possible. Now, I'd like a show of hands of the people in this room that would like to be included in this group of worm people. No one? So there's no one here that would like to be looked at as a selfish worm man or a selfish worm woman. You know, people don't naturally wake up in the morning and say, you know, my goal in life is to become a mooching worm man. They don't. I really don't believe that people do that. But this is what happens when pleasure becomes your number one priority. Through this process, we lose respect for others. When we are so consumed with this desire to gain personal pleasure in life, you cannot support this selfish attitude and continue to have respect for others around you. Though you might try, you might ride the fence, and you might sit there and you might say, well, I can respect this person, I can still pursue this selfish gain in my life. When it comes down to it, and you have to make a choice, respect or selfish gain, if selfish gain is your number one priority, that choice has been made. And respect will go out the window. See, worship was made to be a consuming activity. That's what it was made to be like. When it's in its right place, when we are worshiping God, what happens? God consumes us. And it's wonderful. But when you take worship out of its right context and we are worshiping idols, it doesn't change what worship does. We allow that idol to consume us. And as we are consumed by this worship, by being a lover of pleasure instead of a lover of God, we are easily swayed by all kinds of evil desires. And we've seen this around us. Some of us have even experienced this. We live in a pleasure-rich environment. Pleasure is easy to access. It's readily available. The problem is that if pleasure is your God, then there's no basis for morals. You have no standard or principles to fall back on. There is no governor or boundary that sets one type of pleasure apart from another type of pleasure. All pleasure is pleasure, and that's what you're seeking for. And this leads down roads that are not easy to travel back from. If you'd like, go on and turn over to Revelation chapter 17. In this chapter, we see one of the beasts that have teamed up with the Antichrist. And on this beast is a harlot. Now, she's not just any old harlot. She's not your run-of-the-mill prostitute. She is like the Mac Daddy prostitute. She is the mother of all prostitutes, is how she is described. The prostitute of prostitutes, the harlot of harlots. The angel that is walking John through this vision, he tells John that this woman, this prostitute, is the great city of Babylon. Now, Babylon was a tremendous city. It was a flourishing city of many different cultures. It was a city of glitz and glamour, extravagant wares and extravagant activities, and excessive luxuries. And as a result of this type of culture, there were many things that were lifted up as idols. And from what we know of their culture, pleasure seeking would have been among the forerunners. Babylon was considered a prostitute because of the many ways that she would seduce men to commit adultery against God. That is idol worship. That is placing things above God, cheating on God, being unfaithful to God. Now, many have seen the connection to Rome, a connection to Rome as well in this passage. And they believe that what God was doing was God was comparing Babylon of old to John's present culture, which was Rome at the time when Revelation was written. And he was comparing these two and the current seductions that were present in Rome at that time. See, Rome was an empire similar to Babylon. It had become a great military power. It had a secure, established nation. And as a result, Rome prospered to the point that the focus of the society shifted. And like Babylon before it, the focus shifted from the needs of survival toward the desires of pleasure. And a pleasure-rich environment, like these two empires, seduces its inhabitants like a prostitute. Now, I'm not a huge historian, but from what I've heard about Rome, what I've learned in research about Babylon, they just sound way too familiar. You know, I look at our very own America, and it seems to be following in these very same footsteps. The same footsteps of these mighty empires that preceded us. We live in a pleasure-rich society. I believe the numbers we looked at, and that was just a portion of the numbers. I believe that proves that clearly. And in this pleasure-rich society, we must always be on guard because we are continually being seduced with the idol of pleasure. This is not a subject that we can just lay aside or overlook. It's all around us. This seduction of the great prostitute is alive and well right here in our country, right here in our church, right here in our homes. I believe that God wants us to enjoy the pleasures of this life. I believe that God enjoys those pleasures with us. I believe He looks down on us when we're enjoying the pleasures that He has made available to us. And we're doing it the right way, and it's in the right priority. And it's holy pleasures. I think God enjoys that. And that's what those pleasures are meant for. But we must be careful that we don't fall to the seduction of these pleasures. That we would become lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. You know, when we tackle a subject like this sitting here in church, it's real easy to look at it and say, oh, well, I won't do that. That won't happen with me. That won't happen with my life. I think I've got a good grip on pleasure. It's easy to sit here and say, well, yeah, that's clear. That's clear. That's not a problem for me. But unless you have made a conscious decision to make sure that you are not going to be a lover of pleasure, then when that choice comes up, when you are presented with that, you can't be sure of what you're going to choose. You can't be sure of what road that's going to take you down. So if you have not made a conscious decision to say, God is first in my life, in my pursuit of pleasure, where I can have a healthy pursuit of pleasure, it's definitely not going to be in my top four because I've got those ordered right. God, church family, my family, and my job. So this morning, if you have not made that choice, do not leave here without making that a conscious decision.